Hey listeners, we're in the heat of one of the greatest sports events of the year. You guessed it, March Madness. And the best place to stay on top of all the NCAA tournament coverage? CBS Sports HQ. What is CBS Sports HQ? It is the free 24-hour sports network that's built for fans just like you. From nonstop highlights to news and analysis, CBS Sports HQ has got you covered. Check out CBS Sports HQ. It is always on and always free. No need to pay a subscription fee or have an expensive cable package. Download the CBS Sports app on your phone, Fire TV, Roku, or Apple TV to start watching today.
Everybody, this is Steve Sipa, and welcome to the very first episode of From Complex to Queens, a Mets minor league podcast. I'm joined this week by Lucas Vlahos and Ken Levin. How are you guys doing?
All right. Better than the Mets right now.
Yes, also true.
So I'm going to put the two of you on the spot right now. The opening feature for our show is going to be, and you have Kenny to thank for this, promote, extend, trade. It's very similar to F, Marry, Kill.
Oh, God.
You could promote one person I'm about to mention. You could extend one person I'm about to mention. You could trade one person I'm about to mention.
Great.
Our three candidates for this week are Rowdy the Rumble Pony, Mason the Columbia Firefly, and Clutch the St. Lucie Dog.
Oh, what were the options? Promote, trade, and what was the other one?
I think I have mine. So.
Extend. Promote, extend, trade.
I'm trying to like match the traditional version of this game.
I think trade is kill.
Kill, yeah. Extend, I guess, is marry.
Yeah, have him be part of your long term future, and promote is just you want to see him at the next level. You know,
sure.
You're happy, you like him, but you don't want to deal with him.
Go ahead, Ken.
Okay, so the Saint Clutch, the Saint Lucie Dog, extend, obvi. Mason the Firefly, promote, and then I've got beef with Rowdy the Rumble Pony, so trade.
Interesting.
Him. Yeah.
I mean, it's not beef; it's a horse.
Oh, you got that.
God, this is a trainer. So I agree, because the Rumble Pony is like the dumbest mascot. That's not true. There are some real dumb mascots in minor league baseball.
But it's not even like funny dumb.
No, like, it's not. It's just stupid.
It's not even like the Fresno Tacos or something like that. Like,
yeah, that's amusing. Right?
Where it's just dumb and like funny.
Right.
It's like dumb and dumb.
So let's get rid of the Rumble Ponies. We'll trade them. I will promote the dog. But I really love the Columbia Fireflies.
You know, that's fair.
And plus, they've got those. Do they still have those glow in the dark hats?
Yes.
If I wore hats,
their aesthetics are incredible.
Yeah. So I will extend the what was the Firefly's name?
Mason.
It has a name. Oh, like I guess you put it in a mason jar. Yeah. Clever. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'll extend.
Objectively great.
it's a great mascot, and just for the glow in the dark hats, extend Mason the Firefly. Good lord.
Oh. All right, so in our inaugural episode here, we're going to preview our four full season affiliates: Syracuse Mets, the Binghamton Rumble Ponies, St. Lucie Mets, and Columbia Fireflies. So on a scale of 1 to 10, A, how excited are you guys for the season to begin and see everybody? And then B, how confident are you that any of these teams are going to be halfway decent?
Define decent.
Like
from a prospect point of view?
Put up a good win-loss record.
Okay, that's fair. I'm pretty pumped for Columbia. I think there's a lot of talent on that team.
I mean, I think so. Like, just going up, like, ignoring the rookie ball affiliate since that's so far off, I'm excited for Columbia, and we'll get into their roster in a little bit. I really don't care about St. Lucie because I don't think there's going to be anything interesting there, or at least there shouldn't be. Binghamton, should have Jimenez to start the season, so that's fun. Mm-hmm. And then Syracuse is going to be a good team because the Mets actually made some minor league signings this year, but it's all just so whatever. They've got the one person to care about is Stephen Valines, and I guess, like, yeah, of course, Stephen Valines. I guess, like, Eric Hanhold, who I think is interesting. Who's a lefty? Zamora. And then it's a bunch of veterans and also Tebow.
Yeah, there's not, like, a legit prospect on the position player side. I mean, unless you're really invested in, like, David Thompson or Tim Tebow. Like,
Tim Tebow!
Did I just say that Tim Tebow is a prospect?
I mean, he might be the closest thing that that team has.
yeah, true.
Well, which veterans? Well, I guess we're going to get into which roster details in a bit later.
All right, well, let's start off with now with the Syracuse Mets. This is their first year in Syracuse, their first year in existence. So before we get to the actual team, I just want to go over the history of baseball in Syracuse a little bit. The Syracuse Mets are replacing the Syracuse Chiefs, and they were formed all the way back in 1961. And they replaced an old team, also called the Chiefs, that had been there since 1934, but they left to go to Miami. They were renamed the Sky Chiefs in 1997. They kept that name for about 10 years before going back to the Chiefs. And obviously, last year was the last year that the Chiefs name is going to exist. They play at NBT Bank Stadium, which was known as Alliance Bank Stadium in 2005 through 2013. And PNC Stadium from 1997 to 2005. And that stadium opened in 97, and it replaced MacArthur Stadium, which was built in 1934, and then known as Municipal Stadium because MacArthur was still nobody in history. And they started out as an affiliate for the Twins, and over the years they've been an affiliate for the Mets, the Senators, the Tigers, the Yankees, the Blue Jays, and the Nationals. They were affiliated with the Blue Jays for the longest, basically three decades, from 1978 to 2008. And for the Nats for the past 10 years or so, they've seen their fair share of all-stars and greats and Hall of Famers. Between all those teams that they've been with, they've had guys like Chris Carpenter, Carlos Delgado, Tony Fernandez, Ron Guidry, Roy Halladay, Bryce Harper, Thurman Munson, Dave Steeb, Steven Strasburg, Trey Turner, David Wells, a bunch of, you know, Hall of Famers slash really good guys. So that's Syracuse. And in order to analyze the Syracuse Mets, we need to look at Las Vegas. And Las Vegas, the 51s, their last season, last year, were okay. They were 71-69, which is good for third place in the PCL Southern Division. And I'm a little optimistic for Syracuse this year. I think that pitching was their biggest weakness. And even though the rotation, the bullpen is more or less the same, I think the change of scenery is going to help a bit. It's almost a full ERA run difference between the International League and the PCL, so that could be big. And then, like we were starting to say now, the position players, practically the entire roster is just guys that were signed this winter, plus Tebow, Thompson, you know, a handful of other guys that are already in the system. So I'm a little less confident there. But I think that there's just so much major league experience on this team that they'll at least have a solid showing in their first year. What do you guys?
There's a lot of big league service time on that roster.
Mm-hmm. A few even all stars. Hector Santiago was an all star like 2 or 3 years ago.
Yeah, one of the more generous all star selections ever.
But even like Dilson Herrera hit, you know, was like 30% above league average in this league last year.
Maybe I'm crazy, but I still think Dilson's a legitimate prospect.
Maybe not like a legitimate prospect, but like has like a big league future. Like,
I can agree with that.
I guess I'm mostly just quibbling with like diction, I guess.
Yeah, we can argue about what a prospect actually is, exactly. But he's only 25.
I'm agreeing with your.
yeah. You could chalk up the last couple years to the shoulder stuff after he got traded. I was pretty excited that they were able to get him back, and I mean, there's some really useful major league depth here, and also a team that should be good in this league,
right?
Without having anything interesting in terms of prospects. I mean, unless Chris Flexen remembers to how to pitch.
Hey, he's in the best shape of his life, Lucas.
Oh, good, good. That's a pretty low bar.
Yeah, he wasn't in particularly good shape to begin with, so.
Sorry, Chris.
I don't know, though. Sometimes stuff like that actually has an adverse effect. I mean, look at guys like Jonathan Broxton, I think, is the biggest example I can think of. He was a very large individual. You know, I remember maybe 2010, 2011, 2012, something like that. I think it was when he went to the Cardinals or the Reds, whichever team. It was a red team, so one of them.
Didn't he wind up on the Royals at some point, too, I think?
He might have been, but I remember he was coming back from injury and he was, you know, quote unquote, in the best shape of his life, and he dropped some pounds. And, you know, you could say that some of it was because of, you know, he was injured and everything, but he was obviously a diminished pitcher from his days with the Dodgers.
It's one of those things that's completely meaningless unless they make, you know, they prove it to be meaningful, you know?
Yep.
So, and then is there anything else? Anyone else we've missed on this roster? I mean, all the major league shuttle arms, basically, which we've already mentioned, and that's it. Oh, yeah. Bachelor. We didn't say Bachelor.
It should have a pretty solid bullpen. Basically, all of the prospecting names that are on this team are in the bullpen.
Yep.
Who do you think is going to close? How do you think they're going to split up closing duties? Not that it really matters at AAA, but.
Whoever's there at the time, you know, I think there's going to be so much shuttling that it's impossible to, like, project.
Mm.
You know? Proven closer, Jacob Brame.
That's true. We have at least one proven closer on this team.
Best projected closer on the team, Jacob Brame.
Oh, God. Well, that is Syracuse. And next up are the Binghamton Rumble Ponies. They went 64-76 last year, which was good for fifth place in the Eastern League Eastern Division. And they really just weren't a good team. Peter Alonso and Jeff McNeil were there the first couple of months. And then Justin Dunn and Andres Jimenez were there in the last couple of months. But more or less, the only highlights of that team, aside from them, from a prospect-y point of view, were Tebow, maybe, kind of. If you squinted, Patrick Mazaika a little bit, but I mean, half the team isn't even in the organization anymore because they're either just kind of minor league filler guys that were picked up or they retired. So it just wasn't a good team last year. And I don't really know how much better things are going to be for them this year. One thing, though, is that I think the pitching situation should be a million times better. We're not going to see guys like Joe Shaw or the ghost of Marcos Molina getting like 10 plus starts. I mean, depending on how aggressive Mets want to be, there could be a bunch of David Peterson, Anthony Kay starts. And even if you don't like them, I think that we could all agree that they are better than Shaw and what was left of Marcos Molina.
Yeah, that's not
right.
Great.
Yeah.
And the offense, I really don't know. Andres Jimenez will be at short, but after him, I don't really see anybody. I can't envision anybody that's going to be there that's going to kind of be.
I assume that Desmond Lindsay is going to end up there, probably, right?
Is that where they're going to start Lindsay?
Well,
he was in the FSL last year.
It is a possibility.
They pushed him to the AFL in the winter.
But I would include Desmond Lindsay in my group of guys that are kind of prospect-y if you squint, mm-hmm. You know.
Yeah.
Mazaika, Toffee, who I don't like.
Yeah, I was going to bring up Toffee.
There are guys that are kind of, you know, enigmas, and maybe they would do good, but I don't know.
I mean, I'm just curious. The thing with Lindsay is still health. Like, can he just put together a healthy season? Toffee is obviously low floor, low ceiling, but I think he's interesting because he walks a lot. Jimenez is the only name to watch here. I agree. Like, it's a big name to pitchers. Watch. On the offensive side, I mean.
Yeah.
Do you think they push DeBrell this high, or do you think they're going to make? I mean, he's 23 already. I feel like they should push him up here.
I would hope so.
I would probably rather him get like a couple of starts in St. Lucie, just because that's like a big jump
mm-hmm.
from being old in this alley to being, you know, playing against upper minors arms, but I think the goal should be to get him to double A almost as quickly as possible. You know?
Yeah, I think that he will throw double A innings, but if he starts there or not, that I don't know.
Yeah. I think it's within the fudge factor either way. Like, I don't think there's a wrong answer there.
And Jimenez probably won't be here past midseason unless he really struggles. I mean, he might wind up in AAA even before that.
Yeah.
Well, the Eastern League switched to a split format, just like the South Atlantic League and the Florida State League. So probably once the second half begins, we'll see a bunch of promotions, and Jimenez will probably be in that wave of promotions going up to AAA.
Also, another chance for us to get the math wrong when we do the farm report and try to figure out their record.
Mm-hmm.
Just why can't they make this easy for us?
Well, that is two of our affiliates down, and we'll be right back after this.
Get your brackets ready. March Madness is here, and the best place to stay on top of all the NCAA tournament coverage? CBS Sports HQ. CBS Sports HQ is a free 24-hour sports network that's built for fans just like you. From nonstop highlights to news and analysis, CBS Sports HQ has got you covered by cutting through the noise of hot takes and fake debates to get smart analysis and helpful highlights for your fantasy teams and beyond. Check out CBS Sports HQ. It's always on and always free. No need to pay a subscription fee or have an expensive cable package. Download the CBS Sports app on your phone, Fire TV, Roku, or Apple TV to start watching today.
I'm musicologist Nate Sloan.
And I'm songwriter Charlie Harding.
We're the hosts of Switched on Pop, a podcast where Charlie and I break down pop hits to reveal how the music works and why it matters.
It's our job to help you find those aha moments within the music. Whether you're a pop fanatic or a skeptic,
a teenager or an octogenarian,
non-musician or professional composer, every music lover will discover something ear opening in Switched on Pop.
Yeah, and we think you'll have a lot of fun with us because you're going to get to hear from amazing guest musicians, songwriters, producers, and journalists. Listen to Switched on Pop every week starting in March on the Apple Podcast app or wherever you get your podcasts.
So, things are kind of looking mixed for the upper levels of the minors. Maybe they'll do good win and loss wise, but in terms of prospect development, the jury's kind of out. We're going to look at Columbia and St. Lucie now, and down there, things are very much the opposite. We'll look at St. Lucie first. They celebrated their 30th anniversary last year, and it wasn't exactly one for the record books. They went 27-40 in the first half, and then 27-36 in the second half. And as a team, they were pretty much relevant at no point in either half. Player development was a bigger thing than wins and losses down there last year. Andres Jimenez took some major steps forward. Justin Dunn took some big steps forward. And I think that we're going to see the same kind of thing in St. Lucie this year. Wins and losses, maybe not so good. But there's a couple of guys that might be assigned there that I think, hopefully, if everything goes well, we could see some big things from. Ali Sanchez, he's one guy. He started showing a little life with the bat last year. And I've always liked him. I thought there was a little bit more than he's showed stat-wise. And I'm hoping maybe that he's able to tap into the bat, tap into the power a little bit more this year. Matt Winoker, I like him as much as you could like kind of non-marquee, lower-level corner outfielders without any major carrying tools. And he took some big step forwards last year. I think he could continue that. Hansel Moreno, Lucas picked him as one of his sleepers, and he's a guy that could get significantly better real quick. We were talking about DeBrell before. If he starts in Columbia, I think he could get off. If he starts at St. Lucie, I think he could get off to a quick start. But yeah, like we were saying, there just really aren't too many guys that I could really project to start in St. Lucie.
Have you mentioned Carlos Cortez?
Oh, good. By design. I saw Winoker when he was at Stanford playing Cal. I thought he was decent. I also liked Quinn Brody, who the Mets also drafted, and he just kind of fizzled out. I don't even know where he's at these days.
he split time in Columbia and St. Lucie last year. So
not on the Columbia roster, so maybe they're just St. Lucie. Yeah.
And it's odd because they drafted the two of them. I think Brody was third round and Winnicke was fifth.
Yeah.
And honestly, like having seen both of them, I think that Winnicke is the superior player. And yet he's been held back and Brody has kind of been pushed, has been given more laurels. I don't know. I don't really see it.
I fully admit that I do not have a expert eye or anything, but I was more impressed with what Brody did in college than Winnicke from watching them. I thought Brody was also going to be a much better defender than Winnicke, which I guess probably matters when you're considering how to push these guys.
He is. Brody is and has always been the better defensive player. I'm not really sure if he was playing center in St. Lucie, but he has the ability to play center.
Yeah. And I think that matters especially a lot for in the low minors when you're trying to teach fundamentals. Like you probably need to hold guys back to teach defense and whatnot. Go ahead.
The swing though is just really bad.
It's
Winnicke, at least he's improved his swing, but Brody is just no.
Yeah, well, Brody, I thought, like, had good pitch recognition in college, and I'm like, all right, he's got the Stanford swing, but hopefully they'll work through it, and they haven't, so womp womp. The most exciting name here is Dubrell, I think. Reynier's interesting in terms of, like, a potential utility guy, but we talked about how we all like Dubrell, even though some unnamed individuals left them off their rankings by accident.
It happens.
Yeah. I don't know if you guys disagree with that, if there's someone you're more excited to see.
No, I think that's our official position here, is that Tony Dubrell is good.
Mm-hmm.
And
this roster doesn't have a whole lot else going on.
Yeah, definitely from a prospect standpoint. So
Columbia is,
oh boy,
the exact opposite. Last year they went 34-33 in the first half, and then they dropped to 30-37 in the second half, which put them under 500 for the season. But I think we could all agree, and at least in the first half, Columbia is going to be – it's going to be a crazy lineup. Mark Vientos, Ronnie Mauricio, Sharevan Newton, they're all going to be in the infield together, and even one of those guys having a good year could have a huge impact on the team. Now imagine – all of them, you know, producing at a high level at once.
Yep.
The outfield doesn't really have any marquee guys, but the guys that are going to be out there, Ranfi Adone, Jose Medina, Anthony DeRossi, Ragnar Lagrange, they're guys that they've shown ability to hit solid averages or so. So if they can be, you know, table setters for those impact infielders, that could mean a lot of runs. And then Juan Uriarte is going to be catching. He's a guy that I've said many times. It's kind of aggressive when you consider that he lost the entire season last year. So we'll see if he's up to it. And then looking at the pitching side of things, you know, Columbia is going to be exciting for a third time in as many years, pitching wise. Biggest names are Simeon Woods Richardson and Thomas Zupucki. Woods Richardson, he's basically looking to establish himself as a big-time prospect, and Zupucki is looking to reestablish himself as a big-time prospect after Tommy John. And then joining them are a bunch of guys that are not on that level, but they're all kind of intriguing. There's Jason Valera, who he almost won the New York Penn League triple crown last year. Christian James, who his stuff was down a lot last year in Brooklyn, but he'll be looking to reestablish his, you know, prospect bona fides. There's the enigmatic but often injured Chris Vial. Up-and-comers Jose Budo, Willie Taveras. There's basically pitching for days down in Columbia.
Yeah, this roster is really, really fun.
Could not be happier about it from a player development standpoint.
Columbia has the best MILB TV feed by far.
Yep.
So, oh, they do? Excellent.
Yes.
Yeah, by far. So I'm very excited to watch a lot of Simeon Woods Richardson this year. What did you think of his inning in spring? Did either of you catch it?
No.
Nope.
Nope.
I was impressed, even if the results weren't great. he looks like an athlete out there, like very athletic, lots of arm speed. Well, you know, we'll see.
I mean, that's pretty aggressive for a 19-year-old to go straight to Columbia, right? Like, that seems... 18. I can read, yeah, 18. He'll be 19 in September, so yeah, this is...
Yeah, no, it's just because he was, like, 17 when...
Yeah, so he's young, right.
I mean, at this time this time last year, he was, you know, taking midterms, and...
Yeah.
Now he's pitching against, you know, major leaguers in spring training, so it's not too bad.
And I like Vial just because he racks up the strikeouts, and I'm a sucker for strikeouts.
So. I think he'll move a lot quicker if they eventually decide to move him to the bullpen.
That's what I was thinking. And the Columbia bullpen is kind of empty of solid guys, and I'm wondering if they finally do put him in the bullpen.
I know when
they drafted him years ago at this point, but I remember that Tommy Tanis said that he's a guy that should move quickly. Obviously, that hasn't happened because
he's got injuries.
Right. Well, he never had command, but injuries and just the Mets being the Mets. But this could be the year that he is in the bullpen and does actually move quickly. I kind of find it surprising that he's even repeating in Columbia.
There should be lots of innings, too, because, like, Sapucki's going to be limited in terms of how many innings he throws. I imagine they're probably conservative with Woods Richardson in terms of how many innings he throws. So you could very easily piggyback him or use him in just 2 to 3 inning stints, which I think is something that not only the Mets but baseball in general should start to develop some of these guys to do in the minors more. Given how bullpens have changed, just make 2 to 3 inning super relievers. Like, you've got two really good pitches, you've got a starter stamina, but you can't cut it. We're going to make you a Josh Hader or something like that, right?
Or even like a Seth Lugo type thing.
Where right, exactly.
Should be to get him like length out of the pen, you know?
Right. Now, like getting the ability to get two really high quality innings is super, super valuable. And I think that's something Vial could do.
It's also something that Sapucki could do, as we discussed a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, exactly.
He could be he's the next Andrew Miller, crossing our fingers.
I've also noticed that Fial's height is 6'9".
Yeah, he's a big boy.
Nice. How do you think they're going to split shortstop reps? Like, are they just giving up on Newton as a shortstop? They're going to put him at second base?
He is listed as a second baseman now. So I'm assuming Mauricio should have, you know, he would always get majority of the innings there. But I think that, you know, because Newton is listed exclusively as second baseman now, like, that's it. And
on the Columbia roster, they have him as a shortstop.
On their news release. They have him as second base.
Oh, okay.
I think they're just basically just going to shuffle guys around day to day, you know? Because I could see Vientos getting a day, DHing, in which case Newton would probably play third. You can always stick one of the two of them at second and then flip. I think there'll be reps to go around, you know?
Oh, nobody's going to be losing out on playing time.
No, they're not going to lose playing time to... checking the notes here. Brian Sharp or Chase Chambers?
Chambers is a first baseman, right?
Yes.
He is. He hit 17 home runs in his junior year at Tennessee and then 18, I think, last year. And then really looked terrible in Brooklyn, but that could just be the Brooklyn factor. Who knows?
Yeah, it's his draft year.
281, 350, 392 at Brooklyn with 3 home runs in 217 at bats. Yeah,
not terrible.
Not awful, but...
Not ideal, but...
No, you want more home runs than that from your first baseman. Brian Sharp, is a 26th-round pick from Missouri last year. All right, I'm not going to... He had 5 home runs, though, at Brooklyn.
Interesting.
Not really.
Suffice to say, he is not taking away playing time from anyone.
No, they probably just shuffled them in at first base or third when Vientos gets a DH day. This outfield is empty.
I gotta say, though, if the biggest complaint with the Mets player development over the last few years has been that they move guys way too slow, I'm pretty thrilled that they decided to push this roster the way they did.
It is definitely a lot more aggressive than we're used to seeing.
I think it would have been very easy for one of the three infielders to spend half to three quarters of the year, you know, in the complex and then in Brooklyn.
I mean, I would have expected that from Mauricio, honestly, though, given the results last year, though I understand that every scout says he's the superior prospect to Newton, despite the numbers put up that they both put up last year.
Yep. That would have been an easy thing to do, but I think I'm very happy that they decided not to.
Well, that makes me hopeful that they'll push guys like DeBrell, who we were talking about. I mean, under the old regime, I guess I shouldn't say regime, but under old management, I would have been afraid they'd start Peterson or Kay at St. Lucie for some reason, right? And now I think we're all pretty confident they're going to start at Binghamton.
Yeah, well, we'll see. That would be optimal. Because really, they both spent half season in St. Lucie, and regardless of the results, you know, I don't really think that there's anything left for either one to prove there.
No, no. I mean, Peterson had some injury stuff, I think, again, and Kay was just coming back, but it's time for them to get to the high minors.
Mm-hmm.
How many innings would you guys want to see from Sapucki before the team thought about promoting him? Do you think he's someone who stays the whole year at Columbia?
I don't really see him move unless they stick him in the bullpen or something kind of out of the box like that. I don't see him really accumulating that many innings, maybe 50 to 60. And I would just keep him at Columbia.
See, I would try to get him to to Port St. Lucie at some point.
Mm-hmm.
I just think at a certain point he's like, what, like 23?
Yeah.
At a certain point, you just got to get him moving a little bit. That being said, I don't think he's going to throw enough innings for it to matter really where he is.
No, I don't expect a ton of innings. I just, and knocking on wood and assuming that his stuff is some semblance of what it was before, I feel like his curveball might already be too good for this league.
Yeah, I'd like to see how he plays against more advanced competition.
Right. I feel like
short bursts.
We'll get a sense, I guess, the first couple of weeks.
True.
Please don't Marcus Molina. Please don't Marcus Molina.
Please. I don't ask for much.
I can't be hurt again.
Well, that is everybody that's going to be starting this week. The opening day for the minor leagues for the full season affiliates is this Thursday.
So we can start guessing randomly which DSL guys will make it to rookie ball in 3 months. No, just throw some darts at a wall.
That'll be fun. It's always fun.
I'm pretty sure Alvarez is. I saw him at the complex, and he's a large boy. Like, so sorry, didn't mean to interrupt.
Yeah, no problem. No problem. Before we pack it up, I want to introduce another hopefully recurring segment. It's going to be very simple. I spent a whole 18 seconds thinking this up, and I came up with a great name, which is going to be, oh yeah, that guy.
Oh boy.
Basically, at the end of every show, all three of us will just go back a couple of years. We'll look at and see what players had, you know, really good weeks for, you know, 2 years ago, 3 years ago, 5 years ago, whatever it is. So I went back and I looked at opening day. And the best opening day the last couple of years was Kirk Nieuwenhuis, who went 4-for-4 with a home run on opening day 2014, which is with the Las Vegas 51s. So I think we all remember Kirk.
Oh, yeah.
I remember something about him playing football, yes.
Mm-hmm. Now, here's the lineup for that game, which is the fun part. Danny Munoz was at short.
Oh, boy.
Matt Dendecker was in center.
Okay.
Eric Campbell was at first.
Soup.
Kirk was in left. Zach Lutz was at third.
Wild times.
Cesar Puello was in right.
Oh, man.
Taylor Teagarden was catching.
Oh, jeez. Yeah, did he make the roster for like 10 minutes at one point, I think?
He might have.
Yeah, no, he was the the Grand Slam. I forget when.
All right. there have been a lot of really bad net catchers over the years.
Who have come up, done one thing, and then went back down, yes.
Omir Anthony, Santos.
Anthony Saratelli was in second.
Who?
And then Anthony Saratelli, of course.
Is that someone I should know, or...
And then here's
I don't, if that makes you feel better, Lucas.
I've got no idea.
Here's some good ones. We had pinch hit appearances by Alan Dykstra.
Okay. And
Bobby Abreu.
What?
Wait, the Bobby Abreu.
Oh, right! The heck was that?
Wait, he went to AAA before coming up?
I guess so.
Wild.
And then there was like, everyone wanted to see Dykstra in the majors that year, and Sandy traded him to the Padres for nothing. I don't remember what. Right?
Alan Dykstra?
Yeah.
It's sounding familiar.
Let me consult the Google.
Because everybody thought that he was Lenny Dykstra's son, which he wasn't. Lenny Dykstra, who's also in the news a lot the last couple of days.
Let's not.
It's not our podcast, though.
Please. I'm not equipped to discuss Lenny Dykstra.
Actually, Alan Dykstra was originally traded to the Mets for Eddie Koons.
Right.
He was granted free agency after 2014.
Okay.
So we did lose him for nothing.
Why did I think they traded him to the Padres?
There have been plenty of interchangeable.
Well, this was like one of the original comment wars that I got in on, was that why haven't they called up Dykstra yet? The season's lost, rah, etc.
Good times.
It was a long time ago.
Rafael Montero started that game.
And
then we had relief appearances by Dana Evland, Joel Carreno, Vic Black, and Eric Goodell.
Damn. There are a lot of major leaguers in this game.
Yeah.
Well, it was AAA, so.
Oh, Vic Black. I'm going to pour some of my coffee out for Vic Black.
Fun guy.
I liked him so much.
Yeah, he seemed like a good guy. And he blew out his shoulder.
Did the
Mets abuse him into blowing out his shoulder, or did he just blow out his shoulder?
I don't know.
I don't remember.
Pitching under Wally Backman when it happened, so.
I know. I mean, he didn't get leather stitched, which was criminal, but. Leather snitched? Whatever his name was. I don't remember.
No, that was it. You got it.
Yep.
Okay. I think. Snitched or sitch?
Sitch, I think. Sitch.
Like the situation.
And Wally had him throw like 50 pitches, and he then went off the field, went to the hospital, and got Tommy John on the spot.
Yep. Like, pretty much, yeah.
Thanks,
he has
Wally.
Not pitched in the big league since.
Didn't he pitch for the
Cubs? Oh, he might have. Maybe. Yeah, I know the Cubs signed him for a bit. I don't know if he made the
We've taken your segment and turned it into a wild tangent, Steve.
Yeah. That's all right, though. That is the point of, oh, yeah, that guy.
These guys.
Oh, my God. Yeah, Jack Leathersich has pitched in the majors twice in 2017.
Oh, good for him.
Yeah. Both with the Cubs and Pirates. That is better than I thought.
You made it.
Yeah. Yep. Sometimes he'll always have that ball and that baseball card, maybe. I don't know if they make cards for everybody.
If memory serves, he's a member of the 2015 National League pennant-winning New York Mets.
All right.
That's a thing that will always be true.
Well, no one can take that away from him.
He pitched 11 innings for that team.
For context, Trey Turner just hit a walk-off home run.
Nice.
Well, that's a good way to end.
That's a good time to go.
Close his tab.
Our first episode is in the books. Are you guys feeling like you're in the best podcasting shape of your lives?
Oh, absolutely.
Sure.
All right, very good. Well, follow us on Twitter. I'm at Steve Saipa. Lucas is at El Vlahos 343. And Ken is at KenLavin91. Subscribe to our podcast wherever you get your podcasts from. Remember, since this is a new show, apart from Mason Avenue Audio, you guys got to do that. And please rate and review. And thank everybody for listening. And we will be back next week where we will recap the first week of the 2019 season.